our Made for Mission series. We've been going, feels like forever. It's been 5 weeks. Today is week six. Pastor Jason and I, is that what we're going with? Pastor Jason, is that what we're going with, or just Jason? Pastor Jason. At the coffee shop, it's just Jason. Here, although we should say Pastor Jason at the coffee shop and see how that goes. Maybe we'll get free coffee. That'd be awesome. Because youth worker Claudio doesn't get free coffee, but Pastor Jason might. And so we were talking about it just this week, and we're just excited where this series has taken us, and we're excited that we're going to be wrapping it up as we move into the into the Christmas season, into an Advent series and all that sort of stuff. But today is week six, and we're going to be wrapping it up. Over the last number of weeks, we've been talking about the idea that that we are made for mission. That we're part of something that's bigger than ourselves. And we learned and we shared a bunch of truths along the way over the weeks. We looked at the fact that that we're all called to mission. Like if you're anywhere on this faith journey, it doesn't matter if you're just starting your faith journey with Jesus or if you've been on it for 30 plus years. When I say 30 plus years, I try not to look at anyone directly in the congregation, because I don't want to age anybody. So I'm just going to look straight down. Okay, I did it. And so we learned that it doesn't matter where you are on your faith journey, you're invited into mission, that you are called to it, that it's for everyone. We're all called into participation in this mission. It's not just for the select few. It's not for those who are just pastors or missionaries or leadership within a church, but all of us that are sitting in a chair this morning, we're all part of this. We're all called into participation. One of the other things that we learned, one of the other questions that we asked along the way was, well, if we're all on mission, then what is my mission? What is it? What is my mission? My mission is this. Our mission is this, is that we are to follow Jesus. Like at its simplest, like we could really complicate our mission, but at its simplest form, at its base, what we want to do is we want to follow Jesus. What did Jesus do? Well, Jesus loved people. And then Jesus made all kinds of room at the table for people. So what is my mission? My mission is to follow the heart of Jesus. That means I want to love people. I want to land on the side of love, and I want to make sure that I have lots of room at the table for people that don't think they have room at the table of Jesus. So that's the second part. Third part, then what if this is what I'm doing, if I'm making room for people at the table, then what's the message that I'm sharing with people? Like what is my message? Our message is relationship, folks. That is our message. It's not conversion. It's not the idea that I have a counter and I'm ticking every time that I'm sharing the gospel with someone. It's not that I'm putting a notch on my belt. It's not, hey, I win, I got the most. It's about relationship. We're walking life with people. And so that's what we're trying to do. We want to be in relationship. That's what the message is that we're trying to put out to the world. So then, who are we doing this with? Who is my mission? Well, folks, it's the people that are in your life already. Like the people that are part of your circles of influence already. What happens a lot of the time is when we think mission and when we say the word mission, our minds and imaginations, they jump straight to the idea of overseas missions. And please don't hear what I'm not saying. I'm not criticizing overseas missions. They have a place within all of this, and they're important. Short-term missions are important. Overseas missions are important. I get that. That's part of the kingdom plan. You guys all sent Lennon to Ecuador last year. Like, it was you that sent him, not me. Like, I put him on the plane, but it was you that said, hey, we want to send you to do this thing, and there's value and there's importance in all of that. My experience with that mindset of mission takes place over there is that usually what happens is when people come back here, they're like, oh, God can only work there. And God can only work in these moments. And so what happens on missions, I've been on lots of mission trips. Like, I've been to El Salvador, I've been to Ecuador, I've been all over the place. I've been sick in countries you wouldn't even imagine. And so what happens is you live in a bubble in those mission trips, and then you experience some really good things. But then you think that that's the only way that God can work. And you come back here and you get back to your job or to your school or to your daily things. And you think, oh, God can't work in the daily. Well, folks, that's not the way it works. We have people that are in our mission field every day. Someone that's working at the desk next to you. Someone that's studying in a classroom next to you. That's your mission field. So who's my mission? It's the people that are already in my life. All right, so then, like, why me? Why am I on mission? Like, why? Like, I'm not qualified. Like, I'm not the person. Like, I don't know why God would pick me. Why would God want me to be on mission? Like, I haven't gone to school. I don't know all the Bible verses off by heart. Sometimes, you know, I say the wrong words, and sometimes I have the wrong attitude, and sometimes the driver in front of me in traffic is driving far too slow in the fast lane. And I have thoughts about that. And sometimes those thoughts come out of my mouth. Because you're not, listen, side note, don't drive in the fast lane if you're going 5 kilometers over the speed limit. It's not, like, that's not what it's meant for. It's meant for at least 15K over. I know this because my cop friend told me I could go about 20 over before they really look at me. I've tested it a few times. I also have his business card in my wallet. And one time, I told the cop, I'm a pastor and I'm preaching this morning. And he said, okay, well, I won't hold you very long. Here's your ticket. Why am I on mission? Well, we're on mission because we have a relationship with Jesus. So we have this relationship with Jesus. And in that relationship, then we find our identity. Like, our true identity is found in Jesus. And if that's true, then it changes how we journey in our faith walk. It changes it. If we have a true relationship with Jesus, we identify ourselves and our worth and our value in who Jesus is, it should change everything about how you walk your life. And then our hearts and our lives should reflect the heart of Jesus. So why am I on mission? Because I want to reflect the heart of Jesus to people. I have no other option. So today we want to close off our series with one last thought, one last truth that kind of completes this mission circle for us, and that is, bring someone with you. Bring someone with you. It's super important to close this circle off. Now, do we have any Lord of the Rings fans here? Like, do we have any folks? Really, 2 of you? Well, then we're done for the morning, because that was my whole thing. The worst. How many people have seen the Lord of the Rings? I don't even care if you're lying right now. Just put your hands up so I feel like I can keep going. I'm a Lord of the Rings guy. I like Lord of the Rings. I'm old enough that, like, I watched that crazy, like, animation in the 70s, 80s. Like, it was really weird, and probably whoever made that might have been on something. And so I remember that, and I read the books as a kid, and then when the newer movies came out, like, that was a big deal for us, and we were going, and like, even with Heidi's family, the whole family went, and it was a whole day, and you went and watched this movie, and I've done it where I've actually watched all the movies at once, and, like, don't do that. Like, get a day job, because it's your whole day. And so I'm a big Lord of the Rings fan, and now there's this new series called Rings of Power, and if you're a purist, you're like, this is all wrong. I'm like, actually, it's really good. I like it. It kind of gives you some backstory. And so I've watched it, and now I'm making Judah, my 15-year-old who's in the back there, I'm making him watch it for the first time because I wanted to rewatch it, and I didn't want to rewatch it by myself. And so I pulled him into it, and I showed him the first episode, and I thought, oh, is he going to, like, is he in? And after the first episode, he turned around, and he goes, because I turned it off after the first episode, because, like, I think there was a hockey game coming on or something more important. And he said, what, we're only watching one? I'm like, oh, yeah, baby, I got him. I got him. Now we're in our second season. I'm disappointed because the third season hasn't come out yet. All of that to say, I'm a big fan of The Lord of the Rings. If you remember at all about The Lord of the Rings, what's happening is there's this one ring, the ring to rule them all. And it's really about darkness and light, right? Like, that's what this story is about. It's about the light defeating the darkness. And there's darkness that's taken over all the land. And it wants to destroy and steal and kill everything. And there's this pocket of light that says, this isn't going to be the way it is. And so there's a fellowship of the ring that gets put together. And it's the most unlikeliest group of people that get put together. And they got to take this ring and they're going to destroy it because that's how they're going to defeat darkness. And it's a crazy little group of people that you would never imagine. Like, they would never hang out in the same circles. You got an elf and you got a dwarf and you got mankind and you got, it's just a mix. In the middle of that, there's a wizard in it. And, like, if you haven't read the books, you're missing out. Like, you really are. Like, just watch it. Trust me, you'll thank me. And so the whole idea is this ragtag of people that sometimes get along, sometimes they don't get along, sometimes they're all on the same page, sometimes they just want to, like that slow driver in front of me, you just kind of want to give them a little shake, you know. It's a hug around their neck. And so they're tasked with this journey. And they have to take this journey, and they have to go together, because they're all bringing something to the table. They all bring something, and even throughout that story, there are times when they're all together, and there are times when the group gets separated, and there's one just with the guy that's carrying the ring, and so on and so on. But everyone's still working towards the same task. They're all going together in different veins until they get to the spot where. Like, sorry, if you haven't watched it, I'm going to ruin it for you. Because you had like 40 years to figure out what the end of this is. So, like, light wins, okay? Like, the ring gets destroyed. So this is what they're doing. But they're doing it because they recognize that to defeat darkness, they have to go together. Folks, we're living right now, we're living in a time of darkness. Like, we can all admit that. It's a time of confusion, a time of uncertainty. There's a time of fear. People are living in these things right now. And just turn on the news, and you won't get very far into it, and you'll be like, oh, that's a lot of darkness. Like, you don't know where the finances are going. You don't know where politics are going. You got people turning on each other. You have war. You have catastrophe. You have starvation. Like, it's a time of darkness. But I believe that there is also a time of light that is happening here and now. A time in which God is moving. He is moving like he has, like we haven't seen in North America in a very, very long time. He is moving in individual churches, and he's moving in individual lives. And yes, it's a good thing, because that's where it starts. It starts here on Sunday morning, and it starts as we gather, and it starts in our small groups, and it starts in our relationships with one another, and we see that God's moving in this, and we see new people coming to church. We see people starting their faith walks for the very first time. We're seeing people return. We've seen people return into their faith walk, people that have walked away from the Lord for years, and they're returning, and we're seeing it. We're seeing it in our churches, in our youth groups. We see the numbers are growing and growing, and we've got, like, I talked to youth pastors in the area, and they're all talking about, hey, I have like 70 kids showing up on Wednesday night. Oh, I have 80 kids showing up on Wednesday night or Friday night or whatever night it is, and you see this growth, and you see that there is a move of God that is happening, and it's even bigger than just our churches. There's a move of God that's happening on this island. And there's a move of God that's happening in our country. And it's bigger than just ourselves. It's a kingdom movement that's taking place right now. And we're invited, folks. We're invited into the fellowship. Jesus is saying, come along into this fellowship of the kingdom. So this morning, I want to take a look at two stories that kind of run into each other. And they're stories of darkness and light. And how Jesus, in the middle of that, brings people along with him in his mission. So we're going to be reading out of the book of Luke. We're going to be looking at chapter 8. We're going to be moving from verses 40 and on. If you're wondering, I'm reading out of the Passion Translation. So let me read some of that for you. When Jesus returned to Galilee, the crowds were overjoyed, for they had been waiting for him to arrive. Just then, a man named Jairus, the leader of the local Jewish congregation, fell before Jesus' feet. He desperately begged him to come and heal his 12-year-old daughter, his only child, because she was at the point of death. And so here's Jairus. He's like, Jesus is just coming off. He's at the docks. Jesus is coming off a boat. He's got his disciples with him, and they had been doing a bunch of ministry across the lake, and they've come to these docks, and Jesus is coming off the boat. And as he's coming off the boat, Jairus is already there. And he's there, and he's saying, hey, like, Jesus, I've been waiting for you. And it's a big deal. It says here that he's a synagogue leader. Like in that culture, or in today's culture, think of it this way. Jairus would have been like a city council member, or maybe even like the mayor of that region. Like that, it's a big deal. Like the mayor, imagine the mayor of Victoria walking in here today and going, hey, could you guys pray for me? Like it's a big deal here, and it's really what it is. If you look at it this way, it's a big opportunity, an important opportunity right now for Jesus and his little movement that's starting, because you have someone that has influence over an entire region that's coming to him. Imagine if that leader had given his life over to Jesus in that moment. Imagine the circle of influence that would look like. Like, it would grow, and it would influence that entire city, the entire region. And so Jesus is there, and he's got his disciples with him already, because already he's been inviting them along into mission. They've already been experienced the invite, and so that's why they're present. And Peter is there. And if you know anything about Peter, Peter was the foot in your mouth kind of guy. Like, that's who Peter was. Excuse me. Peter was the move now, ask questions later kind of guy. Peter was, hey, action speaks louder than words kind of guy. And so Peter's sitting there, and he's looking at this, and he's probably thinking to himself, oh man, we have an opportunity here. Like, we just got to turn this one guy, and this is going to make our life way easier. This is the opportunity that we've been waiting for. So Peter and the rest of these guys are thinking, hey, like, we got to get moving. This is important. We got to go make sure that this gets taken care of. Like, we got to go right now, Jesus. But Jesus does this. If we look at the end of 42 and on, as Jesus started to go with him to see her, a large crowd surrounded him. In that crowd that day was a woman who had suffered greatly for 12 years from slow bleeding. Even though she had spent all she had on healers, she was still suffering. Pressing in through the crowd, she came up behind Jesus and touched the fringe of his garment. instantly her bleeding stopped and she was healed. Jesus suddenly stopped and said to his disciples, "Someone touched me. Who was it?" And while they all denied it, Peter pointed out, "Master, everyone is touching you, trying to get close to you. The crowds are so thick, we can't walk through all these people without being jostled." And Jesus replied, "Yes, but I felt power surge through me. Someone touched me to be healed, and they received their healing." When the woman realized she couldn't hide any longer, she came and fell trembling at Jesus' feet. Before the entire crowd, she declared, "I was desperate to touch you, Jesus, for I knew if I could just touch even the fringe of your garment, I would be healed." Jesus responded, "Beloved daughter, your faith in me released your healing. You may go in peace." Now, for me, I'm a word picture guy. Like I run when I try and remember thing or anything like that. It almost plays like little movies in my head. So when I'm reading this, this scene plays out in my head, and I can just see like thousands of people that are just crowding and pushing and trying to, you know, to see Jesus and trying to get to Jesus. Like, have you ever left like a sporting event and you're trying to get down and like you're getting pushed this way and that way, and all you're hoping is like, I hope I don't go like head over feet down the stairs. Like imagine that. Like, even for me, like, I don't, like this is a long shot, but like how many of you ever went to like a concert where there was like a mosh pit at the front? Like, how many of you did that? Yeah, okay. So, shocking, I did that a few times in my life. And I got carried and I crowd surfed. So they pulled me up. Like, I remember one day, I'm at this concert. A guy the size of Pastor Jason looks over at me. I weigh about 120. And he's like, "This is a good idea." And he grabs me by the scruff of my shirt and he picks me up like I'm a chicken wing. And he throws me on top of the crowd. Next thing you know, I'm on top of this crowd and I'm getting jostled this way and I'm getting jostled that way. And eventually, someone lets me go and I end up on the ground and I'm in this crowd. And imagine that. Imagine that this is what this looks like. Like, it's just people everywhere. And in the middle of it, Jesus is like, "Hey, someone just touched me." And I can see Peter rolling his eyes. Like in my head, I can picture Peter just going, "Why does he have to be so weird? Jesus, everybody's touching you right now, Jesus. And look around. Everyone is trying to get to you. Like, literally everyone here is trying to touch you. We have places to be. Didn't you hear? Didn't you see this opportunity that we have for the kingdom? Like, we need to get moving here." Jesus is like, "Well, I got to deal with this thing that's right in front of me right now." And it doesn't make sense. Like, it doesn't make sense when you're reading the story. It doesn't make sense to me that Jesus stops on his way to this huge ministry opportunity to talk to someone that everyone else ignored and despised. Because there's a lot of things that we can guess about this woman. Like, I would say that she's probably poor because it says she's spent everything she had trying to get better. She's probably all alone. The story doesn't mention anyone else. She's poor and she's alone. And she's probably shamed because she's had this disease, this bleeding disease. And in that time and in that culture, you would have been considered unclean and people couldn't have anything to do with you. So she's poor and she's alone and she's shamed. Everyone knows this woman. She has a reputation. And as she's trying to push her way through that crowd, people are probably thinking, "What are you even doing here? You're not supposed to be here. You should go home where you belong." But she's relentless. And she gets to Jesus. And it pays off. And it changes her whole life. Because we have no idea when and how God wants to use us for the kingdom. His greatest impact through your life, not in your life, there's a difference. His greatest impact through your life will probably come at a time that you're least expecting it. Well, here now we run into the second part of that story. We're looking at verses 49 and on. While Jesus was speaking to the woman, someone came from Jairus' house and told him, "There's no need to bother the master any further. Your daughter, she's passed away. She's gone." And when Jesus heard this, he turned to Jairus and said, "Don't yield to your fear. Have faith in me, and she will live again." And when they arrived at the house, Jesus allowed only Peter, John, and Jacob, along with the child's parents, to go inside. Jesus told those left outside who were sobbing and wailing with grief, "Stop crying. She's not dead. She's asleep and must be awakened." And they laughed at him, knowing for certain that she had died. Jesus approached the body, took the girl by the hand, called out with a loud voice, "My sleeping child, awake, rise up." Instantly, her spirit returned to her body and she stood up. Jesus directed her stunned parents to give her something to eat and ordered them to tell no one what had just happened. So here's Jesus. He stops for this woman, and what happens is, on the other side of things, it's too late for Jairus' daughter. It's too late. She's already gone. And even then now, I can picture some of these disciples that were in a rush, that were looking at the ministry opportunity, and they didn't get to it because Jesus stopped for something else and someone else. And what happens is now this is too late, and they're shaking their heads, and they're like going, if we hadn't made that stop, like if Jesus hadn't stopped right here, we would have been here on time. But what Jesus does is super important right here. What he does is he grabs a couple of those guys that are still shaking their heads and going, oh, like if you hadn't stopped, like if you hadn't stopped, Jesus, we would, like this would have been big. Jesus takes those very guys and he says, come with me. Come upstairs and be a part of this moment. And so, yeah, he says, she's just sleeping. And he speaks the words and she rises. That synagogue leader that day gave his life to Jesus. A side note here, that girl was 12 years old. Do you know how long that lady had been suffering? 12 years. I think it's pretty cool that God was waiting for 12 years for that very day to do these things. Like, I think it's super cool that God, for 12 years he waited for these things so that he could do what he was going to do. Think about all the kingdom moments that you'll be a part of. Think about all the moments that God has already laid out that you get to participate in. Again, his greatest impact through your life will probably come at a time that you're least expecting it. And so a lot of us know both of these stories. I've read these stories a lot of times, over and over, as you go through sermon preps or you go through Sunday school, all that. Most of us have a pretty good sense of this, of these stories. I think for me, what happened a lot of the times is I'm looking at these two miracles, but what I've missed is a super impactful moment in the middle of both of those stories. It's a massive moment of ripple effect for the kingdom that takes place there. Jesus arrived at the house of Jairus. He did not let anyone go in with him except Peter, John, and James. So in this moment of impact that's about to take place, in this moment of grace and mercy, in this moment of response to Jesus, in this moment of the miraculous, Jesus says to the people around him, he says, hey, you should come with me. You need to see what's going to happen. You should experience this moment. So we're sandwiched between two miracles. And in the middle of it, what holds it together is that Jesus says, hey, you should come with me and experience this moment of impact for the kingdom. Bring someone with you. We already know that Jesus had invited his disciples to join him on mission. We already know this. Because we already know the amount of times in the Bible and in Scripture that it mentions that Jesus had his disciples with him. Actually, there's so many that if you try and count, you lose count. That's how often Jesus invited them along to moments of impact for the kingdom. Part of our mission is to do what? Follow Jesus. And what does Jesus do? He brings others along in the journey. So how do we do this? Well, it's about relational equity, folks. It's about relationship. If you don't have relational equity with someone in your life, you need to earn it. You need to be there. You need to be present. You need to be available to people so that you can build relational equity so that you can speak into their life and so that you can invite them into the moments that God already has laid out that they can experience from your invitation. How are you going to earn relational equity? Hey, you know what? You could make some time for a coffee. Like I'm not asking for much here. Make time for that coffee with someone. Hey, when you make plans for wing night, invite someone that you normally wouldn't invite. Have someone over for dinner. That's a lot of work to have people over for dinner. My house gets cleaned top to bottom when we're having someone. They're not even going upstairs. Like, they're not going upstairs, but you better believe upstairs is cleaned. Like, my baseboards are clean because that's what everyone's going to look like. But if you didn't know and you're having someone over for dinner, first thing they're going to do is look at your baseboards. It's true. I know. Have someone over for dinner. Like, we're not asking for much here, folks. Invite someone to life group. Like, we have them here. It's a good, soft landing. Invite someone into that. Hey, maybe send someone a message. Like, that's easy enough. Pick up your phone. You're on it anyways, doom scrolling. Like, well, I am anyways. I'm doom scrolling because I need to know what's happening on Instagram. And so then I'm on it anyways. Hey, how much time and effort is it going to take you to send someone a message and say, hey, I'm thinking of you today, just praying. Like, literally seconds. Invest your time in people. Invest your gifts and your abilities in people. Maybe you just invest some of your money in people. Show grace and show mercy. Be present in people's lives. And you will build relational equity. You build relational equity, and then people will hear what you have to say. And when the invite comes to bring them along, they'll be like, I know this person. I'm going. I'm going into the things that this person is going to. You look at the life of Peter, and he was there from the beginning. Peter was right there from the beginning of Jesus' ministry. And what Peter did was he got a ton of stuff wrong along the way. Like he really did. Peter got stuff wrong all the time. But Jesus kept bringing him along, and he kept bringing him along, even though he got the things wrong. Like even that day for this story, Peter is getting it wrong. He's questioning Jesus. What do you mean who touched you? Why are you stopping? What do you mean she's only sleeping? Getting it wrong. And Jesus is going, hey, come along anyways. If we jump all the way forward to the book of Acts, chapter 9, verses 36 to 39. Let me read this for you. Now there was a follower of Jesus who lived in Joppa. Her Aramaic name, Tabitha, means gazelle. She lived her life doing kind things for others and serving the poor. But then she became very ill and died. After the disciples prepared her body for burial, they laid her in an upstairs room. And when the believers heard that Peter was nearby in Lydda, they sent two men with an urgent message for him to come without delay. So Peter went with them back to Joppa, and upon arriving, they led him to the upper room. There were many widows standing next to Peter, weeping. One after another showed him the tunics and the garments that Tabitha had made to bless others. Peter made them all leave the room. Then he knelt down and he prayed. Turning to the dead body, he said, Tabitha, rise up. At once, she opened her eyes, and seeing Peter, she sat up. He took her by the hand and helped her to her feet. And then he called for the believers and all the widows to come and see that she was alive. The news spread all over the city of Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. Peter heals Tabitha almost exactly the same way that Jesus healed Jairus' little daughter. And many people came to believe throughout the region simply because Jesus brought Peter along and brought him along and brought him along because God is a connecting the dots kind of God. We have no idea how God wants to work through us. And when he wants to do it, God's calling is bigger than just ourselves, folks. So my question for you today is, what is God calling you to? And who is he calling you to bring on mission? Who in your life doesn't know Jesus? Who are you going to invite to pursue the heart of God with you? To be on mission means to bring someone with you. Amen? We don't know how or when God is going to do and make an impact for the kingdom through us. So let's be ready. Let's be on mission. Amen.